Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Jones! Bowden!
He's got it! England have won the World Cup by the barest of margins!
Stokes flashes it away, through the covers for four, and England have won the match.
Hello and welcome to another episode of The Analyst Inside Cricket with me, Simon Hughes, and you, Simon Mann. And, well, I suppose we're reflecting this week on another damp week in the county championship with only one decisive result. Some remarkable individual performances, including that amazing innings by Darren Stevens of 190 out of about 300 for Kent, putting on 100 partnerships where the other person scored only about one run out of it. So that was an incredible game, but it didn't result in victory for Kent. And we'll talk about the county championship a bit, but we're actually focusing today on a man who actually won't be playing in the first test in just over a week's time against New Zealand, Ben Stokes. But I've had some time with him up north filming for our World Cup documentary, and I've done an interview with him as well just to hear how he feels, because he's coming up to his 30th birthday, and the Cricketer magazine, which is out this week, has a big feature all about Stokes at 30 and how he compares with the other great all-rounders of the last 40 or 50 years from England. And you've read it, Simon, haven't you?
Yeah, very, very, very interesting. And you know, lots of statistical information in there as well. The sort of comparison between Stokes and England's other three top all-rounders in the last, 50 years, Greg, Flintoff and Ian Botham. And we'll talk about that. Coming up to 30, Yoz, eh? How, goodness me, that really is ancient, isn't it? What were you doing? What were you doing on your 30th birthday? Can you remember? What time of the year is your birthday? I'm just trying to remember.
Well, it's December, actually.
So you wouldn't have been playing cricket. You'd been driving a lorry or something, would you?
I think it was just before I went down the crest to run and broke my collarbone. and so that ruled me out of the season for about 3 months. So my birthday present to myself, 30th birthday present to myself, was taking a ridiculous risk and going down the crest to run, breaking my collarbone and basically sort of terminating my career with Middlesex. So wasn't a good time.
A life lesson there. Be careful as you get close to your 30th birthday. You're not invincible. You think you are, don't you, when you're younger. Now, we selected our England squad last week, or we selected what we thought was going to be the England squad, and we were actually bang on, which is not, it wasn't that remarkable, because to me it was one of the most sort of obvious squads that you could pick. It was fairly obvious that Robinson and Bracey were sort of, on the fringe and ready to be selected with so many players missing, and they basically gone for the players they had sort of available. I mean, there are lots of people performing well in the county championship, bowlers doing well, and Darren Stevens, as you say, still going at 45. I mean, his stats are remarkable. But, I mean, I think that the players they went for were the ones we expected. And now, of course, the task is going to be to try to find 11 out of those 15. And the difficulty of balancing the team, which is something we highlighted next week. Anyway, that's for the selectors. to decide, or the England coaching staff and the captain, with the selection staff whittled down now. Of course, the man who does balance it is Ben Stokes. Now, you've been with him this week. Just tell us what you've been doing. What sort of arty shots have you come up with?
Well, yes, and lots of arty shots. Lots of drones flying over Chesley Street with Stokes in the middle, kind of doing some shadow batting. Of course, he can't actually do any hitting at the moment because of his injured finger, which I've had a look at, and it was examined by a specialist actually while we were there, and he's very confident of the progress. He had to actually have a pin put into his broken index finger on his left hand and have it kind of reconstructed, because the catch he took in an IPL game hit him right on the end. So it really did damage it quite badly, and it looks a bit of a mess. He still can't grip the bat at the moment, but he started bowling this week, actually, in Durham. And he's interestingly, you know, he hasn't done a lot of fitness for a few weeks, just because I think he felt he needed a bit of a break in a way, and he feels kind of quite refreshed, actually, which is nice to see. Yeah, we had some arty shots of him looking quite moody in his gym. He's got a big house in the village of Castle Eden, which is about, I suppose, 10 miles from Durham. Beautiful area. And he's got a big house with a gym, sort of like an annex, with, of course, the inevitable golf simulator in it, with this massive big white screen on the wall and a little tee. And you whack the ball off the tee into the screen, and obviously it animates into whatever golf course you dream of playing. And he hasn't been able to play golf either because of his finger. So that's redundant at the moment. But he's got all those weights in there and everything. So we did some quite nice sort of moody shots of him getting ready to do a workout in his gym. And actually met his wife as well, Claire, who has been an incredible support to him over the last, 10 years or so. And is just a wonderful character, actually, who's just a very homely, sensible, warm, and, you know, very supportive person, which I'm sure has been a huge help to him.
It sounds to me as if you didn't, or you weren't able to take up my suggestion of taking him up to the Angel of the North and getting him to spread his arms wide, sort of, you know, in the lee of it.
It would have been nice, that, but with limited time and about 8 camera crew, and actually, not also, one of the things about filming somebody like him is you don't want to draw too much attention. You know, if you're in a public space of some kind, it's just, you know, people get in the way and all that. Mm. So it's better to try and film in locations which are sort of secluded in some way. So actually his the Chesley Street and then his home was an ideal location. And it's great, actually. He's got a bar. He's built a bar in his house with the World Cup shirt with all its dirt still on it, from the dive he made, of course, to accidentally ricochet the ball for 4 overthrows. Still, the dirt is still there, and it's all framed up on the wall. It looks very impressive.
Now, you've been speaking to him as well. Let's hear from him, because you asked him about, you know, he's coming up to 30. How does he look back on what he's achieved so far?
I think 30 is still young, so I think thinking about looking back on things like that probably will come at a later date when I'm retired and stuff like that. I think whilst you're still playing and still active in, you know, sport, it's all about what's coming next.
So, I mean, you must be very proud. I mean, if you stop to think, you've had nearly 10 years as an international cricketer, and, you know, the things you've achieved at the age of 30 is the sort of things that most people don't achieve by the time they're 60.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's... it is another way of looking at it, yeah, and obviously I do look back on memories already and, you know, proud of them, and will never lose sight of that, but, you know, I feel as if I've still got a lot more to offer to the sport, so looking back now already I think is probably a little bit too premature, if I'm being honest.
I've compared your career to Ian Botham. I mean, not from a sort of performance point of view so much, but one or two stats. And Beefy's bowling average, certainly at 30, was sort of on its way down. Your batting average is on its way up. Is that consistent with what's happening in your head, do you think? And can you put a finger on why that might be?
I think I've never been one to be obsessed around stats or anything like that, and maybe that's something to do with it. Like the fact that I'm not too bothered about at the end of each year going, oh, what's my average with the ball? What's my average with the bat? Just what, you know, how do I get better? How can I get better? There's a reason for that.
And how can you get better?
Just keep working as hard as I always do. If not, find ways to work harder, find ways to get better constantly.
Have you made a slight adjustment to the grip, to the way you hold the bat?
Yeah.
And what is that, and how has that affected you?
I've just opened up, sort of got a more open bat face. You know, I used to have a very, very closed bat face, which, you know, had its benefits, but I feel as if now, sort of working on keeping my bat face a little bit more open than, you know, I have done over the years has, you know, enhanced what I can do in terms of manipulating the ball, especially.
Does it also help you? I know that you talked a bit, I know you've talked a fair bit, or he's talked to you, to Zubin from the Royals, about, you know, things like that. Is that helping you hit the ball further as well, perhaps?
I would say that it's, you know, it's just more consistent now, with the way that the bat comes down, the bat face, everything like that. It's it was, you know, quite alien to start because it was, you know, it was actually quite a big change, but it didn't take me too long to get comfortable and get used to how holding the bat differently felt in my hands.
That's quite a big thing to do, though, isn't it? Mm. Changing your bat.
Yeah, it is. But as I say, like, just always looking to develop and see what I can do to make me a better player.
I suppose in a way, the one thing about your finger injury is it's actually giving you some time off. Has it been a blessing in disguise in a way?
It has. I've actually, people will probably be surprised, but I haven't stepped foot into a gym. I haven't even thought about cricket for about 4 weeks and I've absolutely loved it, which probably a sign that I needed it. And I think that's probably on the back of all of the way that the world is at the moment with sport, for the bio bubbles and, you know, the effect that COVID has had on our sport and our job. You know, I'm not taking anything away from anyone who's got bigger problems, but just sort of labelling that to how COVID has affected us and how it's not just the physical well-being that people are looking after, it's also the mental side of sport as well.
So in a way, it's going to bring you back refreshed, is it, do you think?
I hope so, but yeah, as I said, you know, I've just absolutely loved just sort of chilling out for a month and not having to worry about when I need to be fit for or when I need to be fit to play a game, because I've just been back home and doing what needs to be done as a husband and as a dad.
Bit of DIY?
No DIY, no. No, I'm not quite at that level yet.
And Call of Duty still play a part?
Yes, a lot. It's... not as much because I get shouted at if I spend too long on it in the evening, but I still get on every now and again.
And what are you doing for your birthday?
Surprise, actually. It's my 30th, so it's quite a big one. So my wife's got a few things planned, which I'm not 100% sure of what's going on yet, but I'm looking forward to it.
So that birthday's on the 4th of June, which is the Friday of the Test match. I guess he won't be at Lord's watching his England colleagues play against New Zealand. But what's the prognosis in terms of when he's going to come back and play, Yoz? What's your sense of when he's going to be fit again?
He's hoping to play in the Vitality Blast for Durham in the second week of June. They have a match June the 11th, Yorkshire at Chesterley Street. And that's a sort of maybe a slightly optimistic target, but he's aiming for that. And I think it'll just depend how sensitive his finger is, because although it's not, you know, it's his bottom hand, the left hand, you know, and I suppose in the blast, you're not as likely to be hit on your fingers as you would be perhaps in a 4-day game or a test match, but you've still got to do the fielding. And that's when it's vulnerable more than anything. So he's just going to have to be a little bit careful. And actually, he's now got big, fat index fingers on both hands because he broke the other one in 2011. And he was quite funny, actually, about... We said, how did you break your other one? And he said, oh, I think it got it made contact with a locker somewhere.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's had a few issues with his hands and fingers, some of it self-inflicted.
Yeah. One thing he said in the interview there was that he's really enjoyed the break, having a month without sort of looking at cricket or even doing much fitness work. Of course, he's a manic trainer, has been a manic trainer, and you're asking the cricketer, talks about when Trevor Bayliss sort of told him to slow down a bit. And I can remember being in Sri Lanka when he'd come back from the ground and go straight to the gym, and there's the feeling it's almost too much, and you have to be super fit to play international sport. It helps. And yet he had to just scale it down a bit. But he's not played or not been involved for a month. And actually, it shows probably how much the bubble has sort of taken out of players, because, of course, he wasn't there for 5 months for England, was he? He didn't play in the end of the summer because of the illness to his dad. And then he joined England late in their subcontinental talks. He didn't play in Sri Lanka, so relatively speaking, he's not had much cricket. But he's also sort of relished the break, and I suppose with what's to come, it's really useful to have that time away from the game. I mean, I know as bowlers you need to keep ticking over each week and each month, but there's so much big cricket to come for England in the next 7 months, India, and then the World Cup, and then the Ashes. That it's a bit, in a strange way, I saw a comment from Jurgen Klopp this morning talking about Jordan Henderson, who's not played, but he said he's in training, he's back fit again. In a way, you think about England playing in the European Championship, he's as fresh as anyone. You think of all the Premier League season takes out of a player, but Jordan Henderson, who's not played much this season, is ready to play. And I suppose there's sort of similarities. It's not quite a like for like comparison with Stokes, but there are similarities there. That in a way, I mean, does not playing help you when you get to play when it's time to play again?
I absolutely think it does. I think it regains your love of the game in a way, and instead of it becoming a bit of not a chore exactly, but at times a bit routine, especially the triple format players who barely get any time off. I think sometimes you do need a break just to refresh your mind and body. And actually, he says, as he said in the interview there, he hasn't done any training. I'm still obviously incredibly fit. But he's actually scaled back on things like the weight building stuff. He's got this massive set of dumbbells and a big bar with huge weights on it, which probably I couldn't even roll, never mind lift. And he doesn't do that too much anymore. It's almost just there for show, He thinks it's more important to work on flexibility, and that's where you've probably seen someone like Jimmy Anderson focus much more in the last few years on, just the suppleness of your muscles rather than the size of them, really. And I think just also reflecting on what he wants to achieve and thinking about how to improve in various different ways, that's where I think there's a distinction between him, Botham, Flintoff and Greg, who are the other three all-rounders that we've mentioned today and I feature in this article in The Cricketer, and looking at their relative stats at the age of 30. And it's just really interesting that Botham's bowling average basically kept going up from the age of about 22, he was taking his wickets at 18 early on and was the fastest to 1,000 runs and 100 wickets in tests, taking only 21 tests. And at the time, his bowling average was 18 and his batting average was 40. But both of those went in the opposite direction from then on. And by the time he got to the age of 30, his bowling average was around about 27, 28. And it kept going up because he lost that real potent edge. He was still a very good bowler, but he didn't have that waspish late swing and so on. He wasn't as fit, clearly, when he was 30 as when he was 20. And the same is true to a lesser extent of Flintoff as well. His bowling average never really dipped much below 32 and sort of gradually edged up over time. And his batting average never really changed either. But Stokes, his batting average noticeably has really increased from a low of 32 about 2 or 3 years ago to now climbing into the sort of high 30s, heading towards 40. And, as he was saying in the interview, he's always trying to improve. And if you can stay fit, and you are maybe primarily
a batting all-rounder, then there's every chance that, that you can have a very fruitful career in your 30s.
Yeah, I mean, this, that's an interesting thing, isn't it, about 30 being a milestone. I, you know, I remember when I was growing up, just to use the football analogy again, when you became, when, you know, when you got to 30 as a footballer, so that was not the end, but it was really, the, it was, you know, certainly the beginning of the end. And, you know, you, some of the big teams would look to get rid of their players who were, you know, coming up to 30. And now, now things have changed a bit, their diets and fitness training and all sorts of things.
And rest, you know, some of course, the, as well. I mean, they're allowed to have a bit of rest, yeah.
So, that, so it's, but 30 does feel a sort of bit of a, it still feels a bit of a milestone. And I think one of the really interesting things is that Ian Botham played 77% of his test matches before the age of 30. And Tony Greig played 81% of his test matches before the age of 30. And Andrew Flintoff played 85% of his test matches before the age of 30. So, so but Stokes, we feel, might be something, might be completely different because he's so much fitter and stronger. Although if he keeps getting his finger injuries, obviously that will, you know, undermine him a bit. So he's played, what does he play now? 71 test matches. So how many more test matches can he play as an all-rounder, almost to buck the trend? Or do you think, we talk about him being an all-rounder, that actually as time goes on and the more he gets into his 30s, it will be the batting that really takes over, and that he'll only become an occasional bowler, perhaps, and well into his 30s, perhaps not a bowler at all?
Look, I think he can play a lot of test matches in his 30s. A lot depends really on how much he wants to play. And he's one of those people who is constantly seeking to improve either fitness or technique. It's been interesting to see the adjustment in his batting, actually, because this was something that was originally an issue that was raised by a number of coaches, not least Zubin Barasha from the Rajasthan Royals, who's a real sort of deep analyzer of analyst of batting technique, and has said to him for years, open the face a bit more, change your grip, because your grip's a little bit closed, and that causes you to almost choke the face, is what you call it. Sort of, so you're not hitting it with a full face some of the time. You're hitting it with a slightly closed face, and that definitely impacts on timing. And it actually, funnily enough, impacts on distance as well. When you're trying to hit sixes, if you think of someone like Butler, for instance, when Butler hits a six, the face of the bat is slightly open, almost a bit like a slice in golf, but not quite as much as that. And it does seem to get the ball almost as if you're getting a bit of backspin on the ball, like a chop shot in tennis. And that makes the ball fly further. And Stokes watched the distance that MS Dhoni was able to hit the ball. Again, he has that, just the grip is slightly more open, or allows the bat face to be slightly more open. And it does mean that the ball can be hit greater distances. And I think one of the things Stokes has found is that when he tries to hit the ball a long way, it actually doesn't go as far as he wants it to. Mm. He doesn't hit massive sixes until recently. If you think of I think his six hitting, which, I mean, there was, of course, that amazing innings in Cape Town when he scored that 258, and there was a lot of sixes that day. But the sixes he's hit against the Indians in those one-day series, remember when Bairstow and he totally destroyed the Indian spinners in one of those one-dayers in Ahmedabad, I think, in the winter. That was using his new method, which allows him also to manipulate the ball better on the offside. And it's quite a big step for a batsman to change your grip. You know, it really is. It's like I suppose a footballer, you know, almost deciding to kick it with the other foot or something. I mean, it would take a free kick with the other foot or something almost. But it's just something that they don't find easy, batsmen, to do. And funnily enough, I was talking to Joe Root about it the next day, because we filmed with Joe Root the day after Stokes, and I was talking to him about grips on the bat. And of course, he's someone who's always tinkering as well with his technique and method, and his sort of slightly changed his trigger movements and all that. But he thinks that opening the face has been a help to Stokes, and he went back to those sixes that Carlos Brathwaite hit in the T20 final in Calcutta, and how one of them, although he tried to do it over long on, because he had a slightly open face, it soared over long off the six. And it just gives you a bit more range in all formats, really, if you have a slightly more open face.
So Stokes the batsman, you know, in terms of longevity, I mean, there's no question mark over that, is there, really? Because of his fitness as well. I mean, you know, that was something that, you know, came to plague Andrew Flintoff, of course. You know, he had fitness problems, and also Ian Botham, you know, kept on playing, but, you know, the body was sort of tugging him back. Mm. Tony Greig was a bit different, of course, because World Series cricket intervened, and, you know, so he went in a completely different direction, and there wasn't as much international cricket in the day that he was playing, but, you know, now there is loads of it. And actually, just that comparison between Stokes and Botham. Actually, Ben Stokes has already played more white ball cricket for England than Ian Botham played in his career. Botham played, was it 118 one-day internationals, and Stokes has already played 98 plus 34 T20 internationals. I suppose it's the bowling, isn't it? It's really that sort of all-rounder status. You know, that what will one take over from the other? What's Stokes on? 163 Test match wickets. Flintoff finished with 226. Greig was in the low 140s. And Ian Botham, we know, you know, went on, you know, had that remarkable career. 14 Test hundreds and 383 wickets. But I suppose it's the bowling, really, isn't it, with Ben Stokes? How much longevity is there in his bowling?
Yeah, it's a good question. And again, it's how much he wants to bowl, really. I think, you know, he's better off being used as a shock bowler rather than a stop bowler. But he's a very handy person to have in the lineup. And the other thing about him is he's a restless individual, so he wants to bowl because it keeps him involved in the game. He's not one of those guys who just wants to stand at slip all day. He does want to be involved in the action. And I suppose it goes back to what Trevor Bayliss said to him 2 or 3 years ago: just sort of scale back on your intensity a bit in training, and that'll give you the scope to A, perform better in the middle, and also have a longer career. And I suppose that applies to his involvement in the game as well. He does want to get hold of the ball and bowl these long spells and get into the rhythm of it. But he might just have to control that a bit, because it will be a damn shame if a bowling injury, a back injury or a knee injury or something like that, means he can't play, because his batting is going to be... He's now got 10 test hundreds, so he's behind Beefy at the moment, who, as you say, made 14. But he's going to get 20 test hundreds, isn't he? He's got to, because he's that good, and he's going to bat at number 4 or 5. So he's got the potential to get up into the, almost into the sort of Peterson ranks as for test hundreds, I'd say. But that just he's just got to make sure he looks after his body and doesn't try and bowl too much, I would say.
Yeah, people say, oh, I've heard people say this, you know, Ben Stokes, I mean, how good is he? His test batting average is 37. That's not great. His bowling average is 31, so in the low 30s. You know, that doesn't compare with some of the, you know, the top class bowlers. But it's about putting them together, putting those two figures together. And the mark of an all-rounder is having a batting average that is above your bowling average. So it's worth just having a quick comparison. You've done that in the Cricketer magazine article, actually, about, you know, those four, Greig, Flintoff, Stokes and Botham, about who's got sort of the highest percentage point in terms of points in terms of differential between their batting average and their bowling average. And I was slightly surprised by this, but Tony Greig actually has the best differential of all of them, 8.23 compared to Stokes, as is plus 8.23. Stokes is plus 5.66. Botham is plus 5.14, and Flintoff is minus 0.98, which means his batting average was slightly below his bowling average. I mean,
That'll really annoy him, actually, because he always wanted to. He always saw himself as a batting all rounder, but sadly, that's not the case.
Yeah, and you know, you can do sort of anything with statistics, and it's slightly simplistic in a way, because sometimes you also got to look at sort of match winning performances and decisive moments in games and series. And of course, in a way, I think that's where Ian Botham stood out, didn't he? Because, I mean, he won a series on his own, although, you know, some would argue that so did Flintoff in 2005, although he did have a bit of help from friends, didn't he, Flintoff in 2005. And, you know, Stokes is, you think of Stokes's the two sort of test match performances from Ben Stokes that really stand out in my mind. You mentioned one of them, which was Cape Town. England didn't win the game, and actually, bizarrely, they was at one point on the final day they were sort of in possible danger of losing it in what was a remarkable game. But I mean, that innings was just unbelievable. I mean, anyone who was there that day in Cape Town witnessed that. I mean, it was just incredible, that partnership between him and Bairstow that sort of nearly topped 400, and then of course Headingley. The thing about Headingley was, of course, England didn't win the Ashes, did they? They went on to lose the next Test match. So it's not that it's lost. It'll be one of those great days of Test cricket. And again, anyone who was there will remember it for the rest of their lives. So, you know, there are all sorts of factors that come into play. So for you, if you compare them all, and it's a bit unfair on Stokes because he hasn't finished yet. We don't know what he is going to achieve, what he's capable of doing. And the other three, of course, have finished. How would you sort of assess them? And who would you say, you know, if you were picking you could only have one of them in a test match team, who would you go for? Bearing in mind that Greg has got the best differential. Yeah. Flintoff's had his great moments. Both of them had so many great moments, but sort of really, really tailed off towards the end. And Stokes has got this sort of rising consistency.
What's interesting is that they don't have similar win ratios, actually. And, of course, the win ratio, i.e. the number of matches they played in which their team won, England, it isn't necessarily just their fault, is it, or their doing?
No, of course, because, no.
Obviously, you've got 10 other players, but it's interesting just to see that. And Stokes actually has the best win ratio of all of them. 43% of the matches he's played in England have won. Whereas actually Botham is sort of mid 30s, and Greg is the lowest. He's 29%, and Flintoff's 37. So it goes Stokes 45, Flintoff 37, Botham 33, and Greg 29% or something. But
it's 43 Stokes, 32 Botham, 37 Flintoff, 29 Greg.
Yeah. So, you know, Botham, of course, as you mentioned, won series on his own, but also didn't have that much impact against, say, the West Indies, who were the all-conquering team of the time. And England did struggle at times through the 80s because of better teams around and being slightly kind of ravaged by rebel tours, denying them good players who went off and played in South Africa instead, for instance. So, you know, in a way, it's a bit unfair, I suppose, on both of them to say his win ratio was only 32%. But
also, Yoz, of course, he didn't have central contracts to protect him either, did he? Whereas Ben Stokes does have central. So Both will be playing in a test match, and then he'd go off and play for his county, you know, sometimes the next day.
I mean, to answer your question, I've obviously watched three of them closely and played with one. Tony Greig was a very innovative batsman, very courageous, brave batsman who took on Lillian Thompson, and was a good, you know, a damn good player. I thought his bowling was only effective occasionally, really. So he was very much a batting all rounder.
Yeah,
and he didn't have a big impact on lots of matches. You know, he was a consistent player, but he wasn't sort of he didn't just take the game by the scruff of the neck too often. Flintoff obviously did, but his batting to me was quite inconsistent, and his batting was at times looked pretty shoddy, actually, if he was against good spinners, for instance. I mean, he was totally hopeless against Murali, who was his big mate, and not that good against Warne. I know these two guys were great bowlers, but he against a good bowling attack, he could look a bit shaky. Botham's record is amazing. You know, those 383 test wickets and 14 test hundreds. To make 14 test hundreds, most of them in sort of assault mode, to go with a man who's actually mainly a frontline fast bowler is remarkable. And Stokes, I think his career is on the way up. So who would I choose? I think, to be honest, I think for a 50 over one day international, I would choose Stokes out of all of them, because his batting is so versatile, and obviously, as we saw from the World Cup, he's just got that winning head on. He can manipulate a game and win it as well, and then he's got the bowling and that incredible fielding to add to it. So definitely 50 over cricket out of Stokes, out of all of them. further test matches, if Botham was in his pomp with that waspish late swing and, you know, kind of rumbustious batting and pouching brilliant catches at slip, I'd still have Botham in his pomp. But I think Stokes, in the end, may well be a more productive test cricketer, maybe not a more successful one.
Yeah. I mean, I would say definitely peak Botham for me. I mean, I think peak Botham was just such a fantastic cricketer. And Stokes is, you know, he's incredibly beguiling as well as a cricketer. Just imagine Ian Botham with Ben Stokes's devotion to fitness and training. I mean, it would.
Well, then
be,
it wouldn't be as much fun, would it?
Well, then
and also he wouldn't quite have quite the impact on the opposition that Beefy had. Well, because as we had Alan Lamb, didn't we, in the Virtual Cricket Club a couple of weeks ago, and he was talking about Botham and, you know, going out with members of the opposition and, you know, kind of leaving them for dead, like during the night sort of thing. So he definitely had an amazing impact. And he had an aura, didn't he, Botham, as well, which I'm sure Stokes is
well, that's it. Doesn't Stokes has it as well? Don't you think Stokes has that as well? I mean,
I suppose so. Yeah, I guess so. But
perhaps not to the same extent. But, I mean, I think he has it. There's that intimidating sort of presence, but you know he can make things happen with the bat and the ball. I mean, when he wasn't there in the last Ashes series in Australia, it really did feel as if England. You talk about all rounders and the two disciplines, but to me, I mean, I've said it at the time, and it felt like they were sort of losing about five different things, which was the bowler, the batsman, the fielder, but the aggressor and the balancer. You know, there was so much missing as a result of not having him in the side, and I think he is capable of having that. He is capable of intimidating an opposition. I mean, for those who who listening to this didn't see him both and play. I mean, he was capable though of just somehow getting wickets with awful deliveries. He was sort of coaxed batsmen out in a way that most people would just. I mean, if you bowled that ball, Yoz, it would disappear into the grandstand, wouldn't you? But if Ian Botham bowled it, it would be pulled straight to square leg. And he'd get a cheap wicket.
He had a hold over people. No, I remember him getting Viv Richards out, his great mate, out in a county game once, playing for Durham against Glamorgan. He was bowling these sort of medium-paced lollipops, and Viv was terrified to get out to him and would barely played a shot against him, and then sort of played a rather tentative poke at one ball, which stopped a bit on the pitch, and he got a leading edge, and he was caught and bowled. Beefy kind of diving full length to pick it one-handed off the ground, and that was probably one of his highlights of his career, actually, getting his mate Viv out like that. But he just conjured wickets and also with the bat as well. He could just miraculously haul a game from a no-hope position into a strong and winning position. So he had the Midas touch, I think, which in a way he had just from sort of pure self-belief and talent, whereas Stokes has got this sort of will, hasn't he? He's got this iron will, this indomitability. He talks about in our documentary, actually, he talks about the impact of his dad and Jed and how, as a coach, you know, he just never let the players go home at night until they'd perfected their routines and things. So, he's got that, right, I've got to get this game and I've got to win it and I've got to improve. And, he's just so determined to achieve the maximum out of his ability.
Where has he sort of got to improve in terms of, you talked about his batting earlier and his batting record. In India away, is that still somewhere where he's sort of done okay-ish? He has got 100 in India. He got one in Rajkot in the first test innings he played in India. But since then, he's averaged 24. Is spin an area of his game? When it's challenging spin, I don't mean just playing against spin bowlers. I mean when the ball is turning. Is that an area that has been a problem for him, do you think?
Definitely, and I wouldn't say a problem, but I mean it's an area that he can improve on. And the man to look at for that is Joe Root, who's the greatest advocate of Stokes. I mean he loves Ben. They're so close as sort of teammates and friends and confidants, and Joe loves Ben's sort of dedication, and he said that's the thing that kind of he needs to improve a bit is or not improve, but just work on, is kind of manipulating the ball, rotating the strike, and just not getting stuck down one end, which he is inclined to, because he hasn't got that lightness of touch, which Root has, where you can just steer the ball into a little gap and get off strike against spin, which can be so oppressive. But against all other bowling, I mean, what I really liked about Stokes is the way he's adaptable. So, you know, we know his ability against fast bowling is excellent. And he made that 100 in his second test in Perth when Mitchell Johnson was terrorising everyone. And he proved his ability against pace there. And then, you know, when he's been confronted with bowlers like Vernon Philander, he's been prepared to walk up the pitch and try and get closer to the length and just try and upset the bowler's rhythms and things like that. So, you know, he is immensely versatile and always trying to find a way to get on top as a batsman and improve. And he just bats in the nets for so long as well. He will be in there for hours practicing because he loves it. And, you know, compare that to Botham, who wanted to go in the bat nets and have a bit of a slog and then go and sort of have a laugh on the sidelines. I mean, he didn't really apply himself to perfecting his batting. And he probably, if he had, but, you know, it was a different era then. But if he had, he would have made 20 test hundreds as well.
Mm. Yeah, well, he had a lot of talent, didn't he? Right, so the test series that Ben Stokes is focusing on really is the India series that comes up starting in August. At least we think it's starting in August. I mean, there was the talk this week of trying to sort of bring the international season forward a little bit because of try to complete the IPL. I know you said the last time we spoke, Yoz, that you could see the IPL not taking place, but I mean, it seems as if the IPL...
Changing every week, isn't it?
Well, the BCCI, made a request, can we bring forward the test series or perhaps take the last test and play it first or something, or whatever, I don't know. But I mean, it's so difficult, isn't it? It's trying to squeeze it all in. There's so much international cricket, but they're going to lose hundreds of millions of dollars for not playing the IPL. And you can see why they want to play it. So whether they can find some sort of accommodation remains to be seen. So, you know, but Stokes fit for the first test. I mean, that presumably is the England plan. And then it's all systems go. That series, well, possibly IPL again, T20 World Cup, and then the Ashes. I mean, it's going to be a really challenging second part of the year. You know, he's going to be past 30 there. They are going to need him to be peak Stokes, aren't they? They are going to need him super fit and ready if England are to do anything really in the next sort of 5-6 months cricket.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Talking of India, by the way, we've got an Indian guest on our Virtual Cricket Club this week. Sunny Gavaskar has agreed to be our guest on Wednesday night, an early start, 5:30 p.m. And you can join us by going to worldsbestcricketclub.com. So Sunny's joining us to talk about the India series in prospect and maybe the IPL as well. So hope you can join us for that. It's in aid, of course, of the Cricketers Trust, the Professional Cricketers Trust, which we're supporting with this particular club. It's a £6 a month joining fee, but you do get 4 live events for that and also plenty of other useful perks as well. So worldsbestcricketclub.com. And also that Cricketer magazine I mentioned is out this week. You can subscribe to the Cricketer magazine by going to thecricketer.com/subscribe. The magazine's out this week and there's lots of great features in there as well. And the cover is Stokes at 30. So I hope you can join us for the Virtual Cricket Club this Wednesday night. And we'll be back this time next week for another podcast.
Thanks very much for listening. Yep, Test cricket is back. And it looks as if the rain is going to relent at last. What a dreadful May it's been. Lovely April, dreadful May. But the signs are good for decent weather for the next few days or back end of the week. Let's hope it lasts into that first Test match against New Zealand at Lord's. Thanks very much for listening. Goodbye for now.
Sports Social Podcast Network. Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.